So Malcolm, you asked this question, is once a week okay? Once a month? Does it mean, you know, is there a number? And there's no fixed number to describe addiction. It depends on the individual and what those responses or ramifications are.
Okay, all right. So then let me ask Terry the question. So there's let's say there's a good guy over here. He loves God. He goes to church. He practices good skills in life. But yet he watches pornography a couple of times a month. Does that make him a pervert?
Ooh. Oh, Malcolm, these loaded questions.
Well, it's a question everybody's wondering who's listening. So let's see. Does that make him a Number one, does it make him a pervert? Number two, does it make him a bad person? Number three, should he not do it at all? And where do we go with that, Terry?
And number four, does that mean he's going to hell?
In a handbag.
Oh, and I love the way you throw this question to me.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. We've all heard the saying, we are what we eat. But are we also what we watch and what we listen to? Think about that a moment, and we'll toss it over to Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm sure she'll have a good comeback for that, huh?
Well, yeah, you know me, Malcolm. I definitely feel that what we watch, what we listen to, what we allow to filter into our brain is definitely going to affect us. And we live right now in a very hyper-sexualized society. You know, when you were at the heyday of your career in advertising, sex was kind of the thing that you didn't use in every campaign. But now we see sex being used in selling nearly everything, you know, from shampoo to olive oil to cars. It's affecting the way that our young people consider sex even.
Yeah, although I have to fully admit, Terry, before I throw it to you, and I have to fully admit that I have, and you know, I have in my career used sex to sell campaigns and products, and it sold very effectively. So I have to admit this to you, and let me give you an example, please, and then you can slap me upside the head, Terry, in just a moment here. But let me give you an example. So there was an IT company that was a client of ours years ago, okay? And so then we had a billboards we did in some cities with scantily clad, of course, it's always women, and there was a scantily clad woman, but you could have a scantily clad guy there too. And the headline was, remember, it was an IT company, we can help you get IT up.
Well, it's dang clever, I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm. Terry, what do you think of that?
Oh, Malcolm, you know what I think of that.
That's why I said, hit me upside the head, girl. What do you think I qualified it for, man? Tell me what a bad boy I am. Go ahead.
I love your transparency. But I want to go to the broader question, though, as far as a good friend of mine, Brad Huddleston, he's written a book. And that book's called Digital Cocaine. And what he does in that book is he explains why we're having this digital mentia, this brain rewiring, the issues with multitasking, pornography addictions, video gaming. It answers the questions why medical surgeons are so addicted to video gaming, they have to game before they go in to actually perform a surgery. And it's all because of what this technology is literally doing to our brains, because it jacks up the hormones that make us feel good. So this that surgeon who's addicted to video gaming, it's the same thing as if he was snorting a line of cocaine. That young man who's addicted to pornography, it's equivalent to snorting a line of cocaine. So today we have a completely, utterly distorted view of human sexuality, and that there's a whole history to this and how America got this way. So those are some of my thoughts that we have a big, until we can reckon with the root causes, how did we distort human sexuality to the degree that it is,
Terry,
we're going to.
that's interesting. I love what you just put out there. I got to throw it over to Andrea because Andrea, you answered the question she just asked, but even more so, you know what the ingredients. You talk about it. I've heard you before about where this stimulation comes from and like the endorphins in all of us. And you got a whole list of ingredients. I think you'll put out there in a moment. Tell folks what this all means, will you?
Yeah, well, Terry teased it up perfectly. We are seeing that spike of dopamine, and dopamine is that neurochemical of lusting, of wanting, of desire, and it's also the neurochemical that gets released when we get a hit of the good stuff. So whether that is cocaine or it's chocolate cake, or it could just be checking your social media. Like Terry, I'm sure it's mentioned in that digital cocaine book. You know, young people are addicted to social media because every time they look and they get a tweet or a message or a direct hit on one of their or a like on one of their posts, they literally are getting a release of dopamine in their brain. So they literally become addicted to the feeling, the high, and they go searching for more and more of it. And I think what it really comes back to, Malcolm, to your point about, you know, starting off with sex cells, the reality is that our brains are what drive us to behave in the ways that we do. And it used to be that if you could sneak in a little sexual innuendo into an ad, people weren't necessarily overtly looking for it, but ooh, does the brain respond to it? And now we're just being manipulated everywhere.
Is it possible, Andrea? Because I kind of get high on radio here when I'm on air like this here. You know what I mean? This is like a high for me, right? And I don't
Oh,
take
yeah.
drugs. I don't take drugs or anything. I never have. In fact, I've never taken them in my life. But so I'm asking you, and I don't know the answer to this, but really, it's a real question. Is dopamine a factor into why I get so high and excited about why with media and with radio, why I You know, and
Yes.
I kind of do that in life in general. I'm the kind of guy who can walk out, and people think I'm, you know, you can meet me at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you'll think I'm on something. It doesn't have to happen after happy hour for me. You know what I mean? Why is that?
Well, it's the beautiful neuroscience of what we call flow. You know, when you look at the psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, he wrote this beautiful book about flow. And some people know it as being in the zone. You know, the jazz musicians would call it being in the pocket. Whenever we're engaged in something that uses our skills to the best of our ability, where we get in that state where we lose sense of ourselves, we lose track of time. That's when we get into the state of flow. And yes, dopamine is released, anandamide is released, serotonin is released, so you will feel a natural high. And Malcolm, I'm right there with you. I am a flow junkie. I love doing the things that can naturally put me in that state of bliss. And you're just fortunate to have found your bliss and your way to achieve flow without having to depend on outside
You know, I
substances.
wondered that, Andrea, because I really did wonder when I was growing up in high school and the kids were all doing the drugs and stuff. I had a lot of great friends who didn't do drugs, but most of them did do drugs. And I was at some of those parties, but I didn't do it. I didn't do them. I was never a follower as a young man, and I'm not today. I'm not a follower.
Clearly.
I'm a really bad follower, but I'm a leader. I'm a unique character in that regard. And so they would, and even if people made fun of me, it never really bothered me. I was always a bit of a weirdo anyway, so it's like it's all cool, man. I know who I am, so you don't have to size it up for me, you know? So I was always sort of high all through this life factor. And I guess for some reason, like I come to the party already loaded, you know?
I love it. I just think of these the young kids, or I think earlier, or we were talking about earlier before we went online about our children. I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. If I could do it all over again, in raising them, I honestly would do the same thing as far as sitting down with them to evaluate advertisements and shows and all that. But that cell phone is a trap. And I don't care how guarded that parent is, because we can't stop, this dopamine and the serotonin and all this stuff when they're flipping through Instagram and they're getting, jacked up on the high of Instagram. Because I saw it with my own kids, is that the panic of what happens when one is losing their cell phone. I mean, you would have thought they'd lost their right hand.
I know. I see it every day with my 15-year-old. They go into convulsions when they lose this media, you know. And of course, my son, my 13-year-old, he has now damaged some of his equipment. His iPad, he broke it. The glass is cracked again. And I'm not buying another glass, Andre and Terry. Terry, I'm not buying another glass for that darn iPad. I'm sorry. You know how many times that glass is broken? I mean, I got frequent flyer miles at the technical store over here to fix the glass.
Well, I know of a family whose son was so addicted to gaming that when they tried, as parents, once they realized what had happened, actually in the beginning, they didn't know what had happened. They just thought their son had anger issues. And then it took them, I think, about a year and a half to realize this poor child was literally addicted to gaming. And when they would try to cut back the hours or take his, to take his computer away from him. I'm talking now broken doors. They actually had to take the doors off the hinges, and broken closets, holes in the wall. America has to awaken to what this digital age is doing to our brains and to our families and to our children.
Andrea, you started and you hit it head on that the question I asked is, have we are we what we eat? Are we at what we watch? And are we what we listen to? I mean, I know it's a little bit of an oxymoron question, but we all know the answer to that is yes, yes, and yes, right? I mean, how can it not be? I mean, so all the things we're watching on television and the video games we're playing and the social media and impact, which brings me to the point that all of these crime shows like Law and Order Istanbul and Crime and Law and CSI San Francisco or whatever they are, I don't know the names of these shows. Rape, murder, mayhem. This is the kind of entertainment that people enjoy. I don't watch that stuff personally. I'd rather, I'd rather, skin my knees and fall down and bruise myself than to watch that trash. I can't do it. And there's enough of that going on in the real world without stimulating my brain with rape, murder, and mayhem. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's so pervasive, and it appeals to a certain part of us as humans. We unfortunately tend to rubberneck when there's an accident. Like, we're
Oh, I
attracted
hate
to
that.
blood and gore. And so seeing this portrayed in, these very realistic crime dramas, and seeing it portrayed in video games, it's very alluring to a certain part of our humanity where we're just attracted to this stuff.
Can we
And that's
talk a minute?
scary.
Can we
Yeah.
talk, please? Doesn't that piss you both off when you're driving on a road and they're going like 2 miles an hour, and then you find that 3 miles up and you've wasted, 45 minutes, there's a little fender bender on the side of the road that everybody had to stop and gawk at just to get their visual image of somebody suffering on the side of a road somewhere?
No, it is sad. It's sad that we have to take pleasure in other people's pain, but that's in essence what we're doing.
Well, I'm not the dude that slows down. I'm the guy that speeds up to get out of their way and let them all do their business. I can't stand it when people do that and they all got to see what happened. Who was at fault for the accident? And has anybody heard of what's going on? You got all the flashing lights and everything. How many times have you seen that scene, ladies?
Yeah, far too many times.
That's right.
Happens all
Yeah.
the time.
But the other scene I'm seeing here of late are more and more men, young men, who are coming forward and exposing, identifying, admitting that they have been addicted to pornography for years. From their, I'm talking about young men who are 25, 26, they've been literally addicted to pornography since they were 12 years old. And so I'm encouraged because at least right now, more and more people are coming forward. They are seeking healing because really at the end of the day, what we're talking about idolatry is putting something before, if someone is a believer, putting something before the God of the universe, this addiction, this constant high that people have to have. And so I'm encouraged because more and more men are identifying
Terry, I want to ask you something now as the guy on the show here. Talk to me a moment on what you consider to be, for men out there listening to the show right now, what do you consider addictive, please? I mean, you brought it up a few times now, so let's talk about pornography a moment.
I mean,
What's addiction?
I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor. So I'm just speaking as a lay person.
Sure.
So my definition of an addiction is when there's that pervasive thought, that repeated thought coming back over and over and over again, that somebody has to do something, somebody has to see something, somebody has to get something, snort something, drink something, and it's not that thought doesn't go away until you appease that desire. That's called an addiction, at least in it is. And so, a good friend of mine is about 25, 26 years old, and he, among other young men that I've met, it wrecked his life, it being his pornography addiction, because of what Dr. Pennington was saying about the dopamine and the serotonin. He was addicted.
Okay. Andrea, what do you say to that? I mean,
Well, I think that's why we as parents have really got to monitor what we allow our children to consume. And, to the point about the young person who started smashing down doors and things, that is signs of withdrawal. When you go through withdrawal from whether it's gaming or pornography or other things, that's what happens. The agitation that one feels in their brain and in their body and in their mind generally leads to some kind of outburst. And we as parents need to be mindful of that because, in the beginning, most parents are saying, oh, well, my kid's just over there sitting quietly watching TV or playing a game. That's great. It gives me a little reprieve. But we have to be aware that they are at a very sensitive and impressionable time. And to Terry's point about the pornography, imagine a 12-year-old as his hormones are just starting to kick in and his interest in the opposite sex or even same sex is starting to arise, but maybe he's not quite comfortable expressing that at school. Oh, how easy it is to just watch an image where the girls are always willing, they're always available, nobody complains. And what's unfortunate, besides the addiction, is that that's also what has been dubbed as sex education. People are using pornography as sex ed, not realizing that it's fantasy. It's not a documentary, and that's affecting their relationships.
so that was a question I wanted to put out there. Is pornography changing the relationships out there? And also, the other thing I want to still get an answer from, and I'm hoping to, from Dr. Andrea Pennington and Terry Beatley when we come back after the quick pause here is, I still don't really understand, and I know a lot of you guys are wondering out there, what's an addiction in pornography? So what does it mean? It's every night of the week or twice a day? Or if somebody looks at it twice a week or once a month or is that an addiction? Or should you never look at it? Or as Dr. Andrea just put it out there, that what it does to you because it's not reality in life, and that it's I mean it's not a documentary as she said about sex education, but it's more of some fantasy world. So does that mean it should be totally off the charts and not legal or regulated or I don't know whatever it is they're gonna? Wow, this conversation's getting pretty heavy. We'll be right back. Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington, and with me is Terry Beatley and, of course, Malcolm Out Loud. So, Terry, you described addiction really, really well. It is that feeling of compulsion where one is, you know, consumed with the desire or the idea of consuming whatever that substance is, another hit of porn, another digital game, another hit of cocaine, or even a chocolate cookie. But what really defines it in terms of medical terms is, has that addictive behavior or has that behavior so affected your life that one, you're having withdrawal symptoms, and two, your life becomes less manageable. So Malcolm, you asked this question, is once a week okay? Once a month? Does it mean, you know, is there a number? And there's no fixed number to describe addiction. It depends on the individual and what those responses or ramifications are.
Okay. All right. So then let me ask Terry the question. So there's so let's say there's a good guy over here. He loves God, he goes to church, he practices good skills in life, but yet he watches pornography a couple of times a month. Does that make him a pervert?
Oh, Malcolm, these loaded questions.
Well, it's a question everybody's wondering who's listening, so let's see. Does that make him a, well, does it, hold on. Number one, does it make him a pervert? Number two, does it make him a bad person? Number three, should he not do it at all? And number, so where do we go with that, Terry?
And number four, does that mean he's going to hell?
In a handbag.
Oh, and I love the way you throw this question to me. Okay, does it make him a pervert? Does it make him a bad person? There was a third part to that, and then does it mean he's going to hell? This would be my message. I'm not even going to answer whether he's not a pervert or just what. We have to get back to and again, we talked about this in your first show, worldview. It depends how you look at the world. What is your worldview? As you well know, I'm a Christian, and God has a purpose for human sexuality, and it's by all means, it's not what our country has morphed it into. What I would challenge is, how are we to look at our fellow brothers and sisters? You know, how are we to look at them as just sex objects, just as an object of our personal lust? Or are we really trying to embrace that person for who that person is? To want to get to know that person, not just look at them as a sexual being. I'm not going to sit here and label somebody a pervert. The only person I'll label as a pervert was Dr. Alfred Kinsey, who gave us all this.
Okay. Boy, I just want you to know, some beads of sweat just went off my forehead, Andrea, because when she said what she just said, the only one I'm going to label a pervert is, I thought she was going to say my name. I said, oh my, don't tell me, Lord, Terry's really mad with me today, man. All right, you better not. All right, so Andrea, I got to follow up with you, girlfriend, so you got to pick it up now.
And boy.
The same questions. Now, help me. You're the doctor. You get this better than most people when it comes to sexual education and all of this, and you help people through these things. Talk to us, please. I think people want to know. And I think Terry brings up some very interesting points, which I know you agree with me that they are very interesting and thought-provoking. But let me bring back the same questions I put out there. And could you give us any closure on any of those questions?
Well, closure, probably not. Terry made a very, very compelling argument from the religious side of the table. Listen, you know, I see people, couples who come to me for sex education, and religion has so distorted their views on sexuality that they are no longer functional. So we have to be careful there. But here's where I will tread very, very lightly. I do disagree with Terry in that I think that adult films, erotic literature, and erotic movies can be very helpful for a couple. I get the idea of not wanting to look at someone as a sexual object. Objectification is not where I would go. But for many couples who might enjoy watching some erotic film together, it can be very stimulating. It can turn things on for a couple who's had a dry spell, or for someone who's experienced some sort of trauma, or they've had surgery. So I would say this, and the only closure I can give you is this: it is a very individual choice. And if you feel that your God is going to judge you, then you may not choose to go there. If you feel that your sexuality is meant to be enjoyed and explored and never exploited, I will definitely draw that same line with Terry, but I feel that it doesn't necessarily make you a pervert. Now, if you're watching some really crazy porn that is depicting, you know, animal stuff and right, that's a whole other story. Right. But the tasteful erotic films, in my opinion, does not a pervert make.
Right. Well, you answered what I was sort of asking. Terry, and you may not want to go there, Terry, but I'm curious again, respectfully, do you accept any of that as a Christian? Where do you fall in that realm? Are we being judged for that in the way that Dr. Andrea Pennington just put it out there in that regard?
Well, you're saying, are we being judged for it? You're talking about, well, how does God look at this? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's part of it. She just put that out there and talked about, again, if you believe that God is going to judge you for that, then, I mean, she had a great answer she put out there, I thought.
Oh, sure. Oh, well, it's a great answer if you don't have the worldview of a biblical worldview, because the last thing I would want to do I've been married for 30 years. The last thing I think that would the very last thing I think would be healthy for our relationship, my husband and my relationship, is for us to sit around and watch a film watching two other people have sex. Now, I found it very interesting that she wanted to draw the line about we wouldn't, you know, recommend, you know, crazy stuff like having sex with animals. But therein lies the slippery slope. Who, you know, once you open up this can of worms, you know, so you're saying that watching a tasteful film of watching two other people have sex is a good thing. And then it's like, well, what's wrong with maybe two guys and one woman having sex, or it's called a very slippery slope. And so I would say once you avail yourself to that, there's no stopping because it kind of goes back to the whole thing, the serotonin and the dopamine. You can never get enough of it. And therein lies the problem of pornography. That's why you interview these guys who have porn addictions. Well, you can't get enough of it. It keeps ratcheting up to the next level. That's why now we have so much of this violent porn. Now we have porn with children, even though that's been from the very beginning, thank you to Playboy, and that's been proven in court, that the whole root of pornography started with porning out these children. And that's been proven in a court of law. But anyway, I totally disagree, and it's a slippery slope, and, you know, but you know, I'm not one to sit here and say, oh, well, I'm judging.
Do you have a drink? Will you have a glass of wine or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've personally, this would be, you know, kudos to Andrea, you know, as far as knowing yourself. My mother was a passive alcoholic, as well as some of her kin. And I saw the same traits in me. And so I'm 54 now. I guess I was in my early 40s. And yeah, I would be thinking about a glass of wine at 10:30 in the morning. I mean it literally. I realized that, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Because I was already, you know, I guess, you know, subliminally figuring out how am I going to relax when my brain's already thinking about a glass of wine. Now, I was able to put the restrictions on myself, and I didn't touch alcohol for at least a year and a half. And now I'm acutely aware I do have the makeup of being an alcoholic. I'm not one.
Well, I understand that it is kind of genetic. Is that right, Andrea? It's supposed to be.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, there's definitely a genetic propensity. And I also had someone with alcoholism and addiction in my family, which I think also primed me, because it brought so much devastation to the family, mm-hmm. and it definitely made me more aware. And when I was in my last year of medical school, I was introduced to acupuncture. My mother was treating women who were addicted to crack cocaine, and she was working with an acupuncture program, believe it or not, where they could detox outside of the hospital with acupuncture. And that was, you know, the first time I got introduced to the professional treatment of alcoholism and drug addiction. So it's been a part of my career. And it's so devastating when we see that someone completely loses control. And like you said, Terry, it's just to be thinking of how you're going to relax and thinking of a substance right off the bat, that's what happens with addiction. They're instantly thinking about how can I get my next fix?
I never did any of the drugs and I never did marijuana either. So when I say I don't know, I mean, I really don't know, because I know people say, you never did a joint. Now, I had a friend recently, a woman friend, who wanted to have a joint with me so badly, because she knew I never had it. You know, she said, oh yeah, you can say, let's get Malcolm out loud. Hi, this is going to be fun, man. And she was all over it. And I really thought it was kind of intriguing to me, because I really liked her a lot. And I thought, well, that would be kind of cool, maybe. But you know, I never did do it. You know, I never did, but she tried several times. And it's not that I was playing, you know, resistant. I don't know. Certainly, I'll have. We can sit down and drink a bottle of wine. I mean, we can have passionate sex all night. We can do all of that stuff. Yeah, I'm all for that, man. I'm on it. But you know, I don't need the drugs to, you know, put me in another altered state somewhere. I'm sort of already in an altered state in real life, so I don't really require that stimulation, you know. But well, I probably said more than I need to. But go ahead, ladies, as you were. Now the emails are going to come in, you know, on the show here. What the hell is up with you? Let's get Malcolm. There'll be a national campaign. Get Malcolm to try a joint.
Well, the first time I saw cocaine, I had just turned 12 years old. We had already moved out to the country, but I went back to the city up near Washington, D.C., and was spending the weekend with my 12-year-old girlfriend. And we went out to a party, and I couldn't find her. And they said, oh, she's out in so-and-so's car. So I went beep-bopping out to the car, jumped in the back seat, and then she was sitting in the front seat with a guy friend, and they turned around and held out this little mirror with this white stuff on it, 12
oh,
years
wow.
old, and she's offering me this line of cocaine. And, of course, my heart's beating, you know.
Did you do it?
I knew you were going to ask me.
Come on, Terry, confess and give us the gospel truth. Did you try it?
I will give you the truth. No, I didn't. And I'm so thankful, because I knew immediately it was wrong. Now, interestingly, at this little party, you got to keep in mind, these are 12 and 13-year-olds at this party. There was beer at the party. And I can't even remember if I partook in that. But I did know that I was not to snort cocaine up my nose. So I just think, you know, I'm so thankful that I had the backbone to be able to tell these two peers no. But how many people out there, though, you know, that start just like that, so innocently, you know, because that could have been me. Mm-hmm. So, so this addictive world we live in, I wish people could hear this message. So.
Yeah, I tell my daughter the same thing. I tell her stories like that, just like you. People at parties would offer me stuff, and that peer pressure for most people will make them crumble. But I have these conversations with my daughter and let her know that, you know, just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean you have to give in.
Amen.
You're not going to seem more cool. You're not going to become more popular, and they won't hate you if you don't do it. They may talk about you at school, but that's okay. At least you'll be alive to be talked about.
And if they do hate you or talk about you, they're not worth it anyways.
Amen.
So that's it. Move on. I can only hope and pray that my kids, the two there that are at that very vulnerable age, I so pray that they don't take on drugs, because it is so not necessary. I mean, it is so not necessary to go there. And I don't know. I don't know if they'll try it or where they're at. I can only hope. I mean, they know from me that I don't think there's a place in life that you need drugs to have a great time. I think you can have a great time with a lot of other things. I don't put everything under the religious cloak to say, you know, it's
sure.
a religious. It's got nothing to do with that, man. It's got to do with your health and sanity and sanctity of being a decent human being, period. That's it. And
That's
that's it. You want to, listen, you want to have a few drinks. You want to, do that. I mean, I'm not talking about being an alcoholic again, but you want to do that. You want to have passionate sex. You want to make wild love all night. Great, do that. You even want to watch an erotic film, a couple of those. No problem with any of that. God bless you. I don't think you're going to hell for any of that. I don't think God is going to sit there. This is my opinion now, and I'm entitled to my opinion. And my opinion is, I think that the religious community overestimates how much God is going to judge us in the end. I don't see God up there in his infinite wisdom saying, well, let's see now, Fred. You did this back then, and this, you did a lot of good things in life, but you watched a porn film back when you were 26 years old with Mary Lou, and that's just not a good thing. And so we're going to have to turn the page for you, and you'll have to go this road over here. On that note, we'll be back with Terry and Andre in just a moment. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
Hey, welcome back to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I'm Terry Beatley, and I'm online with Dr. Andrea Pennington, and of course, Malcolm Out Loud. And we're glad that you're joining us. I'd like to kind of weave this back right now to the topic of, and Andre, I'd like to field this to you because you have children and I have two children. They're now adults, but I remember what it was like when they were young and I'd be standing in the grocery store line and, maybe it's a long line and we're right there in front of all the magazines and there are magazines about 86 ways to have sex with your boyfriend, or this voluptuous woman with everything but her nipples showing on the magazine front. And I remember standing there with my two minor girls thinking, as a woman and as a mother, how am I to respond to this? Do I ignore it? Do I talk to my children about it as I stand there in line? Or as a citizen, do I say, you know what, I don't really like the objectification of women, and I'll flip that magazine cover around to protect the eyes of the little boys and girls who come after me, which is what I would choose to do. But Andrea, how about you? How do you tackle some of this retail stuff and the objectification of women?
Great question.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, and I hate to be the one to just throw a wrench in things, Terry.
I love it. Go ahead.
Well, the thing that we certainly agree on is the objectification of women is a bad thing. And you being your brother's keeper or your brother's children's keeper by turning over the magazine, kudos to you. You'll never believe this, and I'll have to take a screenshot and actually email it to you. But I was celebrating just last month that the cover of Red Magazine said 21 Days to Better Orgasms. Yep, it was a story of a woman who had read my book and wrote about it. And I was able to celebrate this with my daughter because she's been, along for the ride for the last 2 years as I've been writing and researching this book, The Orgasm Prescription for Women. But the interesting thing about this that I'll say, and I promise it's not a bad ending, Terry, but when I first started working on this project, my daughter came to me and she said, "Mom, when are you going to be done with this?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "How long is this project going to be, the topic of conversation here?" And I said, "Well, I just started writing the book. This was, in 2015. So I have to write the book, then the book is released, and then I go on TV and I promote the book and I do book signings." I said, "So probably the next 2 years." And her little face fell. She said, "You mean I have to hear you talking about that stuff around the house?" And here's the thing. So she was 9 and a half at the time. And I can get that she was just at that age where she didn't want to hear about other people's vaginas and sex and stuff. But here's what it opened up for me, Terry. I was able to start having conversations about sex in a way that I said, "Honey, this book is therapeutic. It's helping couples to maintain their relationship and their marriages and their happiness as well as their health." And so what it's allowed us to do in our household, she won't appreciate it now, but she may appreciate it when she's older. She can now understand that talking about sex, talking about our body parts, talking about what is your boundary, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate, what does it mean to be objectified, why do men go through these crazy hormone shifts, now my daughter has normalized, been normalized to this conversation. And so we can talk about it when we see it on the cover of magazines, or when we see a Pepsi commercial or some other commercial that where they're clearly trying to appeal to the lowest common denominator using sex. She's more aware, and I believe it's going to make her more empowered as an adult later on.
Oh, I'm totally for educating children. Absolutely. I just don't want to be walking through the grocery store and have the front of magazines trying to educate my children. And I think that's the big difference. So your child's educated and my children are educated, and the topic of sex can certainly be talked about, but in the right context. What do you say, Malcolm?
Well, it's interesting that, before I answer that, I want to ask you, Andrea, truthfully, if you're going through the grocery line, some of those, I don't know what they call them, these magazines and stuff, and I just want to bring back to what I think Terry's talking about. Some of them are fairly ridiculous and over the top, back to the, really not glorifying women in the right way. I mean, they're pretty grotesque. Are those mm-hmm. there, you certainly don't endorse, I don't believe you endorse that garbage. I mean, I assume...
Absolutely not. No, Malcolm. But what I do endorse is having conversations with our young people about the airbrushing, about the objectification, and so that they become media literate, so that they understand how they're being manipulated or how these advertisers
Andrea,
would like
so
to manipulate.
If you were going through the store and a couple of magazines really offended, you would have no problem with turning them over, right?
I wouldn't, except that here in France, it's not like that. Remember, I live in the French Riviera, and they're not as sensational, like 21 ways to drive him wild in bed and what your man is really thinking. Right. It's not like that here.
Okay, all right. But I mean, all right. So here's the thing. I think they're all the lowest possible denominator. Those rag magazines, Terry, that you're referring to are absolutely over-the-top ridiculous. And people who buy them, I don't know why they spend their hard-earned money on that garbage. I still can't figure. I've never bought one in my life, but I'm a kind of guy that doesn't buy a lottery ticket either, So I just don't. You're not going to get rich from me when I go to Vegas, because I'll eat in a nice place and go to entertainment, but I'm just not a gambler. You're not going to get my money. And that's a whole other addiction. We can talk about it another time. But the point here is that, I think what I see here is a bigger conversation about authenticity. And let me speak a moment about this, please. I think listeners out here will appreciate where I'm coming from. I look at the quality of life and Andrea, what you're saying, as a very authentic person. And talking to your children that way, very authentic. I grew up in a family where they weren't so outspoken about it. I grew up in the Nazarene Church. The Protestant church where it's, everything is hush-hush and everything is very, very formula, if you ever talk to them in or outside of the church about an orgasm or a vagina of any kind, you would be you would be you would be appointed to hell immediately, you know. And they would show you the front door because you would never do that because that's just not the way. But then here's the difference. And I know I'm going to step on toes here with this, but sorry. But then, of course, then you find the minister having an affair with the organist, you know, and they're doing the kind of thing. But it's okay for them to do it. So I find a lot of people in church, they don't put the action with the words. They don't do what they say. And I find an enormous amount of that where instead of being authentic as a person, to say that, you know, why, what's the problem that we can't talk about these things? We're not harming anybody. We're not evil. But these are parts of it. And I don't believe for a minute that God didn't give us these body parts and give us this dopamine and the rest of the fabulous ingredients that Andrea can very eloquently put out there, okay? I don't think that is a bad thing. And I don't think he says, now you only procreate, but don't use those any other time. I don't buy that. And nor do I buy that we can't talk about it and be real people and still be a Christian and still have a great path to heaven. I absolutely believe that as well. But I think there are people who get overly, I call it religious. I guess as a Christian, as a Christian myself and as a man of faith myself, I'm just really turned off by religion at this moment of my life.
Well, I'd like to just say something about that. What one of the world's most famous Christian leaders, and I completely understand what you're saying. I really don't disagree with many of the things you just said. So I'm not stepping on your toes. I don't know what Andrea's going to do, but one of the world's most famous Christian leaders, Pope John Paul II, he wrote extensively on the theology of the body.
Tell me.
And it's way too much to get into, but it's called Theology of the Body, and you can get it. It's probably 3 inches thick. He wrote letter after letter after letter, weaving this beautiful connection in. Of course, this is a biblical worldview of God's design for man and woman and family. And so if you want to get if
How
you
does that
want to
fit? How would that fit? I'm fascinated with what you say because he is a world leader that I always liked. I always liked him when he was
Oh,
here.
well.
He was one of the ones I enjoyed very much. I considered him my pope, even though I wasn't Catholic. But it doesn't matter. That's how I viewed him.
He was
And so,
like.
but how does, tell me that in a real summary state, what you just said, how would his view of that book fit into the conversation we're having? Can you tell us that?
Well, it's better understanding what God meant by the design of the male and the female and how to glorify God, not just with our bodies, but that whole connection of mind, body, and soul. And so it's really quite the antithesis of the world that we live in now, where we're just like Andrea had said, we're so hypersexualized. It's been distorted, you know, with everything we've been talking about. That's not God's design for human sexuality. And so, as odd as it may sound, there's a pope who wrote extensively on human sexuality, and people can get it. It's called Theology of the Body.
Well, I'm definitely curious to crack that
I
open,
am too.
but I think what I would counter to that is there isn't a person on the planet or who walked on the planet who can be the ultimate arbiter of what God's design is or was, in my personal opinion. And I also feel that judging everything through one religious view is a dangerous proposition because if you happen to be born into a different family on a different portion of this beautiful blue planet, then you're going to have a completely different worldview, and including a different view of sexuality. So, for example, if you grew up in India, the divine portrayal of sex between a man and a woman is indeed a spiritual act. If we look back into authentic tantra, the true tantra, not this weirdo Western neo-tantra, but true tantra is a path toward enlightenment, according to their belief. And so sex and pleasure is not something that's only used for procreation, according to their religious views. And so to say that one religion is better or the other, other, or that one person can interpret that, for me is a dangerous proposition, because then you are putting yourself in a position of judgment. What does that say about the Aborigine who grew up in, you know, the bush without access to your quote unquote Bible? Does that mean that they're a sinner or they're going to hell because they don't follow that particular religious view?
Well, this is quickly turning into a whole religious conversation.
Terry, that's what happens with this show. We just sort of weave and ebb. And
I will gladly enter into that, but I have a feeling we're going to be running out of minutes. What Pope John Paul II wrote about in Theology of the Body, in a nutshell, it's building a culture of life. Because what we're experiencing right now, and I mean, all you have to do is go on the internet for 5 minutes, walk through the grocery or whatever, you know, go into a high school and talk to 15 kids. We're living in a culture that has embraced a culture of death. And so this whole thing about orgasms, whatever you said, 21 days to better orgasms, as if an orgasm is the apex of life. If an orgasm is just for orgasm's sake, and it's not, if it's not in context of having that relationship with the other person, if it's purely for just pleasure. Mm-hmm. So literally we could go all day on this one.
I just come up with three questions in my mind. I don't know if I can ask them, but go ahead, Terry.
Let me just digress. What he was writing about, Theology of the Body, it's to build a culture of life. Not a culture of death, because we're living in a culture that's all people want is pleasure. They don't want responsibility. And so all this orgasm talk, well, if it's orgasm without marriage, well, all this sex, doctor, usually many times leads to children. And so then it puts us in the jam of, oh, all right, I'm unmarried, but I had the best orgasms in the world this past week, but now I'm pregnant. And now what do I do? And we know the culture we live in, doctor, is now a culture where, oh, well, it's a woman's liberation. She should be able to abort that child. Well, and now, Malcolm, you got me in my track and we can talk all day on this one. But so what I'm saying is theology of the body, it's not theology of pleasure. It's theology of the body. God's design for man and woman in a world that a culture of life. So that's summation of.
That's beautiful. I know we only have a couple of minutes, but Malcolm, you got to give me a moment to at least respond. Come on now.
Please do.
Well, I want to bring up one point that Terry made about orgasm. To say, Terry, that orgasm is not the pinnacle of life is just wrong. Orgasm is the pinnacle of life. It is the beginning of life. It is how we bring life. If your daddy hadn't had an orgasm, you wouldn't be here. Just the same as with me. But I just want to say one thing. I'm not promoting the book, but I do want you to understand that my book is actually a very spiritually deep book, encouraging people to look at their sexual relationship as a spiritual, sacred experience. And I am not advocating orgasm for the mere pleasure of an explosive orgasm, but I'm advocating it as an expression of our divine right to pleasure, and that specifically for women who have had a problem achieving it or didn't think they deserved it or have just settled for bad sex just to please their men, that's led them down a path of suffering that is preventable. But I the one thing I will say is I believe that celebrating life and helping our young people recognize the sanctity of their lives and their bodies is of paramount importance to me.
But are you separating, doctor? I mean, are you okay with teenagers having sex as long as it's good sex and the girls are having orgasms?
No.
Well, no. I mean, it's not meant to be a funny question. It's a serious question, because right now our tax money goes to support an organization that is their worldview.
I don't know that they're promoting, you know, teens having sex for the purpose of good orgasms. I think they want to protect people who will give in to their hormones. But as a parent, no, I'm certainly not saying, hey, kid, if you're going to go out there and have sex, make sure it's really good and that you get yours. Absolutely not. I'm advocating for responsible, conscious, consensual, mutually consensual sex. Mm. And I would advocate that one should wait until they are truly in love with their beloved. It would be ideal if it was with the person they could spend the rest of their life with. But the reality is, humans weren't made for lifetime monogamy. Oh, Malcolm, oh. I just went there. We were not even hardwired for lifelong monogamy. It is the exception, not the rule, that someone could stay with the same partner for 30, 50, or 60 years. My hat is off to you, Terry, for being able to do that, but the majority of humans on the planet cannot and will not.
And Malcolm, boy, I love this conversation. Oh, and it's too bad we're running out of time. You need to have us back on.
I would love
to explore this at great length.
We will.
Because what she's promoting does not lead to a culture of life. Mm-hmm. It leads to a culture exactly what we have right now. I could go through a litany.
Here's the thing. The cool thing about this, Terry, is what is so unique about this forum and this show is we have such unique personalities with very, very diverse backgrounds, as we're seeing throughout the shows. But the one thing that connects everybody that I see is we have some really good people, strong people, highly opinionated, as I promised. That was the delivery. We told everybody up front that life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure would be all about that. And it would be about all the things that matter and great conversation, which we're having today. So the key is, listen, to sum it up, I mean, everything in some sort of moderation, maybe, okay, I think. And I think we all have to speak to our own conscience, who we are as people. And, you have to get up in the morning, I think, and be able to look at yourself in the mirror, friends. And
absolutely.
When you get up in the morning and you look at yourself in the mirror, are you happy with what you see? And if you're not happy with what you see, are you willing to change that? And thank you, Dr. Andrea Pennington, Terry Beatley. To be continued.